Next step, number 705, with the palindromic date of 12/9/21.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the Next Step with Father Vazgen. We are the voice of Armadoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. In these weekly episodes, you will find that Father Vazgen's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on the solid principles of Christ's love, faith, and hope. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
Well, glad to have you with us on this December day. It has finally started to rain here in Southern California. I know. Some of you don't think that's a big deal. It's a very big deal. Here in Southern California, you know, we've been going through a drought. And today, tonight, we had some rain. So the streets are wet. But we don't know how to handle it here in Southern California. People go crazy. This morning, I was taking a drive. And people just, you know, slam on brakes, don't know what to do, slipping and sliding. Anyway, it wasn't that bad. It wasn't too much rain, but the forecast is for more rain ahead. Whatever the case may be where you are listening, I hope for the next hour you have a little bit of calmness that you can just, if it's raining, if it's snowing, whatever the condition may be, just kick back. And those of you in Australia who are enjoying this beautiful summer, enjoy. Kick back for a little bit. We've got a great show for you. I'm going to be sharing with you towards the end of today's show some of the events for this coming weekend. We have our annual Children's Memorial this Sunday. And of course, I want to give you some updates on Gabriel and Katie J, the celebration of life. This Saturday, we'll be out in Hermosa Beach. I'm going to be doing a service out there. But we do also have an Armenian church service, which will correspond with our Merelots that's coming up in January. So I'll fill you in all on that at the end of today's show. But I want to start off with where we are on the church calendar. We are in the middle of Advent. It's a period, it's a season that gets us prepared for Christmas. And this Sunday's gospel passage, I mean, you cannot ask for a better Christmas gospel than this one. It's my absolute favorite. Yeah, I know. You think you know what I'm going to be talking about. No, I'm not talking about away in a manger. I'm not talking about the shepherds or the wise men or anything. This is authentic Christmas. It comes to us from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 14. That's right, chapter 14. So Jesus is not a baby in this one. No, he's in his ministry right now. He's full force. And he's telling us a parable. I told you it's a Christmas story. Why? Because in so telling this parable, he's giving us the Christmas list. Like what he wants for Christmas. You know, like everybody does, you know, kids, they go, and here's my list. These are the hot items that I want. Jesus is telling us this is the hot item that he wants for Christmas. Can you believe it? Okay, let me share it with you. It comes to us from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 14. He says, when you give a dinner or a banquet, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your kinsmen or your rich neighbors, lest they also invite you in return and you be repaid. But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind. And you will be blessed because they cannot repay you. And you will be repaid at the resurrection of the just. And there you go. That's as simple as it gets. It's Jesus' birthday. He wants us to give him a gift. And that gift is to help others. To do for others. Especially to others who have no way of paying back. I know it goes against everything we're taught and we see, especially during the Christmas season. Hey, what are you getting me? How much is it worth? Should I get more, less, and all? You know, we go through all that every year. And so it's really refreshing when you find somebody who gets it. when you find people who are doing. And that's what we're going to be sharing toward the end of today's show when we talk about Gabriel and KDJ too. But for right now, I want to share with you an incredible young soul who's out there working through an organization called FLY. She'll tell you all about it. Yes, some of you may have picked it up. We did a podcast with her in the Armenian language last week. I wanted to do one in English, and that's what I'm going to present to you, to our Next Step audience. This is a interview with Alina Samuelian, representing FLY, Freedom Loving Youth. And, well, I'll let her tell you the rest. Alina, it is so good to have you with us today. I know that we shared some conversation last week in Armenian, and I'm glad that you speak both languages so we can do an English one right Definitely. Now. So welcome to the studio.
Thank you so much.
And I want to start off by talking a little bit about you, about FLY, the work that you do with FLY. First of all, give our listeners a little bit briefing. What is FLY?
Of course.
Airplanes, what? What is that?
First of all, thank you so much, Father Voskin, for having me here and giving me the opportunity to talk about what I love most. So Freedom Loving Youth FLY is a nonprofit charity organization that my mother and I founded together about 10 years ago. And the main mission of the charity is to help impoverished children and families in Armenia, Syria, and in Lebanon. Our work began in Syria 10 years ago when the war broke out, and then we dove right into Armenia when the four-day war happened in Artsakh in 2016, and we just got into Lebanon last year when the blast happened. So we do have teams of volunteers established in each country that volunteer to carry out the humanitarian work, and my mom and I personally visit Armenia twice a year. We just got back in September, and God willing, we will go back in January. The way that we work is pretty much hands-on with each one of these families. Majority of our work is concentrated right now in Armenia, working with families that live in severe poverty in metal containers. And, you know, the irony is today, the day that we're meeting, December 7th, was the day in 1988 that catastrophic earthquake hit Armenia that changed Armenia's history forever. And it's actually as a result of that earthquake that thousands upon thousands of families suffered in poverty and to this day continue to suffer in poverty, living in metal containers that once used to should have been temporary dwellings until they lived in normal homes because they lost their homes during the earthquake. They were meant to serve for like a two-year purpose, and then they were meant to live in normal homes. But 30 plus years and they're still living in these containers pretty much made from tin metal. They don't have bathrooms, they don't have showers, they don't have running water, no gas, no heat, living among rats, bugs, just inhumane conditions. Thousands of families still live in these conditions.
So 30 years, you're talking about not only just the people who went through the earthquake, but actually their children and their children's children.
Yes, three generations.
Who have lived only under these conditions.
Yes.
Only.
This is
their reality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
And that might seem very odd to people, but let me back up a little bit because you're right. Today is the anniversary, December 7th, when the earthquake hit. And why a lot of people knew about it was because at the time, the Soviet President Gorbachev was visiting here in the United States. He was meeting with Ronald Reagan, the president at the time, and had to cut his trip short. And because it was cut short, it had the world's attention. All of a sudden, everybody knew about it. And thank God that at the time, people were awakened to it. But who would have thought 30 years mm-hmm. later, mm-hmm. there's still a condition. Mm-hmm. And so you're right there. You're dealing with these people who have gone through the earthquake. You've definitely met survivors, but tell me about their children, their children's children.
So these cities that we primarily help families in are the cities of Gyumri, Vanadzor, and Spitak. These three cities were the cities that were worst, affected the worst by the earthquake. And these three cities have one of the highest poverty and unemployment rates in Armenia as well. So the families that we work with in these cities, you know, you meet these, you see the three generations, the grandmas, their children and their grandchildren living in these conditions. And it's just unbelievable because, you know, I was born and raised in LA, but, you know, I've always held tight to my Armenian roots. And, you know, growing up, all of us heard about the poverty that existed in Armenia, but we never imagined that it was to this extent, especially after so long of a natural disaster like that happening. Who knew that there were thousands of families still suffering from its aftermath to today? And, you know, you walk into this container and it's a normal way of living for them, that there's no running water. They shower in buckets. They heat up water on their they don't even have stoves. I don't know what to call it, but it's like a wood burner that they burn wood in and it generates heat. Used to a life of hunger. If there is bread to eat, they'll eat. If not, you know, they're used to not eating. The cold is just unimaginable in the wintertime, especially now, because living in a metal container, there's no insulation, right? So it's humid and it's cold. And, you feel that in your bones when you walk in. I mean, there's a reason that my mom and I choose to go the two toughest times in the year, once in the winter, once in the summer, because you won't really know what someone's going through until you feel it on your own skin, right? So we do that on purpose. That way we can pass on that information to the public, to the community here, of what that's like. So winter is unbearable. Summer is just scorching hot. And, just these kids are living in inhumane conditions and no child deserves to live this way. And, you know, their bathroom, when I say they don't have a bathroom, it's literally a hole dug up in the ground outside. And, it's hard to imagine what that's like in the middle of the night, leaving your container, walking a long distance, no electricity, no light. There's bugs, there's rats. It's just a very unsafe and unhealthy environment for a child. In the winters, especially because these families don't have the means to buy firewood. So, you know, they burn whatever they can get their hands on, from old clothing, shoes, trash, plastic bottles. And you can imagine, you know, what kind of chemicals and strong odor that emits in the container, and all the kids breathe that in, you know, but the families have to do whatever they can to keep warm. So it's just unbearable. It's inhumane. I call it a hell on earth. And it's really unfortunate that families to this day, more than 30 years since the earthquake, still have to suffer from its aftermath.
I think we're always conscious of the audience that we have. No matter how bad it is, if somebody's listening to this podcast, they at least have electricity, they at least have an MP3 player, mm-hmm. or some kind of computer that's translating, so you're not really that bad. But I think that also brings in the issue of I don't want to use it as in a negative way, but ignorance. Mm-hmm. People would look at that situation you just described and say, wait a minute, where's the government? Mm-hmm. You mean there's people that are living, I could understand for a week, 2 weeks, but 30 years? Mm-hmm. Where's the government? What are they doing about it? Mm-hmm. Anything.
Yeah, from the information that we gathered, so the thing is, back then when the earthquake happened, whoever lost their home, let's say, for example, a family, the Mardirosyan family. Let's say they were a family of five, right? And they lost their home in the earthquake. That family was actually given a home. But the thing is when the kids, they get married, they have kids, the family gets bigger, there's only one home to keep all those people. So what ends up happening is part of the family keeps it, the other part of the family is left out. So most of the families the information that we gathered is that most of the families that lost their homes got one. But the problem is that when the family is to that size, you have people left out, you have people going back to those containers, and you have people that are still repeating that same cycle of poverty. So besides that, I mean, there is welfare, that these families get, but it's obviously a small amount. But I mean, if you count the thousands of families, you know, it adds up, of course. But of course, we all wish that not a single container existed in Armenia, because, you know, I always say, put a family in one room, just give them a bathroom, give them a shower, give them plain bread to eat every day, but let them live in humane conditions, you know, with dignity. And that'll be enough. But it broke my heart to pieces. When we got to Gyumri, actually in 2016, and we stepped into the city, it's 2 hours away from Yerevan, from the capital. And a lot of people that visit Armenia, you know, Yerevan's beautiful. It's like Europe. It's really modernized throughout the years. But, you know, little do they know that if they just step out of Yerevan, a whole other world exists there that they can't imagine. And we stepped into Gyumri, and the, you know, speaking of today, the remembrance of the earthquake, back, you know, 5 years ago when we first went into the city, the energy, the smell of the earthquake was still there. You still see those dilapidated buildings. You still see those slums, those containers, and you feel like the earthquake just happened recently, you know? And it's unfortunate that, you know, something that happened so long ago still has such a bad aftermath, but I'm grateful to at least have the opportunity to do what I can to work with these families.
Okay, so your group, Fly, yes. Freedom Loving Youth.
Yes.
And you are funded by who?
So basically the way that we run all of our projects is pretty much through donations. We're a very grassroots-based charity. We do our best to keep our expenses to a minimum. So all of the people that work for the charity are all volunteers. We don't have any employee expense. As far as the funds, the pretty much primarily all donations. So we have monthly donors, we have people that donate, you know, one time here and there, and mostly from our charity events. So we have annual galas every year. We haven't had one, you know, for a couple of years since COVID, unfortunately. And that's where people can come together. It's a formal dinner reception, and a lot of proceeds are collected that night. And that's how pretty much the charity keeps going, is by the community's involvement and support.
I know people are going to ask, how can I get involved? We will definitely have a link to Fly on our show notes today. So if you're listening and you're inclined to give, and I know many of you will be after hearing this this incredible voice for these people speaking, please check out the show notes today, and you'll have a link over there. So you get out there, you're a grassroots movement, and you started off, you said, I don't want to let that go too, in the Middle East, Syria,
yes,
and in Beirut. What was going on over there?
So we, Fly was pretty much born out of, you know, the war that happened in Syria. And back then, if I can keep the long story short, so my mom is originally from Syria, from Aleppo, Syria. She was born and raised there, came to the U.S. when she was 13. Her and her family were blessed enough to be carried by Syria after, you know, her ancestors went through the genocide. So when the war started and was worsening, my mom just, you know, had this urge in her to do something, to start something, to help kids and families in any kind of way. And back then, her former classmate from Aleppo, Syria, who she grew up with, who now is the Bishop of Damascus, Syria, Bishop Armush Nalbandian, they had both said goodbye to each other at the age of 13. You know, Bishop Armush went to Armenia to study and become a priest at the time, and my mom flew out to US, and they just lost touch for 25 years. There was no social media or anything back then, right?
No fooling.
So, and then 25 years later, this is 10 years ago, they reunite back in LA. The bishop had come to LA for a fundraiser for their school that had been affected by the war. And he got in touch with some classmates, and he got a hold of my mom. They caught up after all those years. And then, you know, one subject after the other. And my mom shared her, you know, her dream of starting something in Syria, starting to help families and children in need. And then that's where it started. The bishop went back to Syria, and we started with small projects. And I still remember back to this day, I shared this touchy moment in our other interview in Armenian, that I still remember it like it was yesterday, where we got the video and the pictures of our first project in Damascus. It was a group of 60 children that we provided school supplies for. And, you know, back then, for a year and a half, my family and I, we were carrying out these projects solely by our own monthly donations. So Fly didn't exist yet. It wasn't a 501c3 or anything. It was just on our own, without the public's involvement. And after we got the footage of our first project, you know, my mom and I, we got really emotional. We broke down. We started bawling in tears, and we just looked at each other and just, you know, sometimes, you know, the best things are unsaid. You know, we just looked at each other, and we both felt that this is something that we want to do for the rest of our lives. We want to help people. We want to be those wings that they can fly and stand up, and we want to be the reason that they smile and they have the opportunity for a new life. So that's where it started. And then to this day, we actually still support children and families in Syria. But thank God, since the war, you know, has quieted down and has calmed down, and ever since we got into Armenia 5 years ago when the four-day war happened in Artsakh, most of our attention has been concentrated on Armenia.
So you also mentioned Beirut. I don't want to skip out on any of the places
of
that
course.
You've been. And what about Beirut? Was that after the bombing? Or was
that was, yeah. Okay. So after the blast happened, you know, at the time, you know, we're not a multi-million dollar organization. We're very grassroots based, as I mentioned. But, you know, we couldn't see the catastrophe and not step in and do something. Mm-hmm. So we went ahead and established a chapter there. And back when the horrendous blast happened last year, we established a chapter and we started fundraising as much as we can, as fast as possible. And we delivered medical supplies to the urgent care centers all over Lebanon. And we helped many, many families with food and all kinds of supplies, all necessities they need. So we did that to hundreds of families back then.
Tell me about after the war. You mentioned about after the war, things changed. Artsakh war, the 44-day war.
Yes. Yeah.
Isn't it sad that I have to refer to which war?
I know. Like, yeah. It is. Yeah. It definitely is. Yeah. So how we got into Armenia 5 years ago, there was a 4-day battle that happened in Artsakh. Mm-hmm. Was severe, but definitely not as severe as what we just went through last year. And originally we stepped into Armenia to help the children and families that whose fathers or whose family members sacrificed their life in this war. So that's the reason that pushed us to go to Armenia. But from that reason, a whole new door opened. And, you know, that's when we... that's when we learned about the earthquake that happened so long ago. That's when we found out about all these containers and the families that live in severe poverty. So that was kind of the initial reason that we stepped in, and that opened the door to like a whole new world that we weren't aware of. So that was in 2016. And then since then, what we've been doing is directly working one-on-one with these impoverished families. Just to give the listeners a bit of an idea of what kind of aid we provide. So these impoverished families that live in these metal containers, so we usually don't pass out any money. And the reason for that is a lot of these families have debt, and rather than using that money to cover the debt, we want to use whatever proceeds come in to purchase and deliver all the necessities that they need. So whatever donations come in, it's used dollar for dollar to purchase food, clothing, school supplies for the kids, toys, hygiene products, household items, meaning they don't have fridges, they don't have stoves, they don't have the means to live a normal life. So what you and I, what all of us need on a day-to-day basis, they don't have. So we start with those basic necessities first, because you can't help someone before you feed them, you clothe them, you make sure that they're living like a normal human being. So we start there. And then, you know, we are very precise with how we pick and how we monitor families, because we take that very seriously. Because of course, you know, in every country that poverty exists, you know, there are that category of families that, you know, no matter what you do, you're not going to be able to help them because they've chosen that life for themselves. And Fly, you know, with Fly and all of our work, we are very serious with the families that we pick, because we want to make sure that the aid that is given to families that are ready to utilize that to move forward and rise up and change their life. So after the basic necessities are given, we kind of monitor the family's progress. We see now that they have, you know, nothing really to worry about themselves or their kids to be taken care of. We see what they do in that time period. And it's very important for us to see, even if it's half a step forward, just to see that step forward, to see that they're going to put an effort to move forward and change their life. And after we see that, we focus on more long-term solutions like housing, like finding them, helping the mothers find jobs, get educated, help the kids with education. And then we move on to those more long-term solutions. So that's what we've been doing the past 5 years in Armenia. And thank God, since then, we've seen a lot of miracles happen. We've seen a lot of changes happen. We've seen a lot of mothers and children move forward. And, you know, a lot of the families, just to mention to our listeners, is about 97% of the families that we help in Armenia are single moms, unfortunately. This was to my surprise. It was something, a reality that I couldn't believe. Just mind-boggling to know that there are so many families in Armenia that, you know, the dad has left, has abandoned the family, has gone to other countries like Russia to work, and just has never come back, has found his own family there, and just completely forgot about his wife and his kids. So a lot of these mothers are single moms struggling with the kids in these inhumane conditions. And a lot of the moms also are depressed, are suicidal, have kind of reached that final finish line in their life, and just need that pickup to stand up and get out of the dark hole that they've gotten in to be able to make a change in their life.
I think that's a nice spot to take a break right now. As we do every week, I take a break and select a song of the week, something to give us a little bit of time to digest what we've heard, something to relax ourselves, but also to highlight some great, great music. Isabel Bayraktarian has a new album out, Songs for Children. Here's a selection off of that album. Oh. Children's Prayer is the name of the song. The artist, Isabel Bayraktarian. This is off of her new album, Armenian Songs for Children, Mangagan Yerker. And I will have a link on today's show notes so you can check out not only this album, but just all the wonderful, wonderful, beautiful music that she puts out. Just check out the discography. It's amazing. We're really fortunate to have a jewel like this in our community. But this particular song I selected, first of all, it is a composition of Gomidas Vartabed. And just the name of it, Children's Prayer, and the words to it. I was thinking about as Alina was talking and sharing the story about these families and the situations. What is the prayer of the children? What do they pray for? And it's so basic, you know, that God, look over my mother, look over my father. These are the two anchors that everyone has, all children have. And imagine when one of those anchors, both of those anchors, gets uplifted, uprooted. I mean, what happens to a life? The destruction of a life. And these are not things that just come and go. It affects them. It affects their children. It affects generations. And when we come together on the next step, when we come together as a community of faith, we have to be open to the idea that so many people have been hurt. It's not just a magical on-off switch that, okay, now I've got God and so now everything is okay. But to understand that there is a lot of pain, to put your feet in the shoes of others, to understand that, you know, they've been through a lot. And there but for the grace of God go I is such an important statement because it can happen. It can happen to any one of us. So that's our song for this week, Isabel Bayraktarian. Check out our show notes. And as I always tell you, it's important that we support our artists because they give so much to our world and so much to brighten our lives, to let us see and walk in the shoes of others, to feel the pain of others. And in feeling that pain, we understand the incredible, incredible healing power that can come with a faith in God. Let's return now to our interview with Alina Samuelian. We left off where you talked about these single moms and the entire idea of depression, suicide, and I could say definitely someone who's in contact with you, your energy level is incredible. So even I think depression would kind of like be done with after they had a taste of you for a little bit. But I'm going to ask you to let's switch gears a little bit. You're sitting here in California, beautiful area. You've kind of got everything right around you. Why would you leave the comforts here to go to some place like that, whether it's Syria, Beirut on the last thing, or Armenia? What is it that draws you to these places? Why are you there?
I could say, call it a calling. You know, this isn't something that you just wake up and you decide to do. It's something that I feel like it's you know, all it is God's plan and his calling. And, you know, I mentioned something last time in our other interview that, you know, I kind of, what I feel like my mom and I and our team are just pencils in God's hands with the meaning of, you know, you're called to it. You wake up and you feel like this is something you have to do. And you feel like it's humanity's duty to be there for one another, to be that helping hand, to stand up, that life is completely meaningless and empty if I were to just live it for myself and not do something to help those around me, not give back, not be the reason that someone can smile and have a better life, because I've been blessed with far more than I deserve. I have a roof over my head. I have food to eat. I have clothes to wear. I have a family and friends that love me. I have a business. I have everything I need and more, you know, and there's many, many people in the world that haven't had the same opportunities as me for
you know, many, many reasons. I mean, if we were to go back to this earthquake, this is something that could happen to any of us. This is an earthquake, is a natural disaster. It's not like these families were born poor. This is something that can happen to any one of us and can take away everything that we have at any moment. So, you know, how can I just watch that and not do something about it, right? And primarily growing up, you know, very, very close and tight to my Armenian roots, you know, I couldn't see the poverty and the inhumanity that existed in Armenia with these families and not feel that I have to do something about it. I could just, to answer that question simply, it's a calling. It's just this fire in your heart and soul that burns, and it's something that you can't ignore, and it's something that, you know, when you feel it, you know that you have to do it till your last breath, because that is what truly gives you that peace and that fulfillment. It's something that no person or no material or nothing in the world can give you.
I think that's an important reflection that you made there, that it's that there but for the grace of God go I. It could be any one of us. Mm-hmm. And it just hasn't happened. It happened to somebody else. And so you pick up and you go and you, I understand that that's a calling. You have it. But I also know that you're a woman of faith.
Yes.
And that faith, I think, drives you. Just the idea that if you've got a Bishop Armash in your life, I know that you have to be a person of faith, because I know this guy is he's one of those too.
Yes.
Do you feel comfortable talking a little bit about your faith?
Of course.
What is it that drives you from your faith, like that leads you in this direction?
I would say, I mean, faith has everything to do with it, because, you know, it's FLY, of course, was founded on these roots of our Christian faith. And, you know, we're so blessed to have Bishop Armash by our side, because without him, we wouldn't be able to do any of this. But I feel like it stems from, you know, thank God. I mean, I grew up with a strong faith in Christianity since I was a kid. You know, I remember, you know, before my mom would join me in church, I remember being a kid and walking down to the church that was by my house by myself most Sundays. And I can't remember a day that I wasn't close to him. And, you know, I thank my family for that, for instilling those roots in me, for raising me with that Christian faith. And I feel like, you know, in everything that we do and all the missions that we serve, you know, for FLY, our faith is the root of it, because, you know, Christ himself tells us to be there for our brothers and sisters, to spread his love, to spread his light, to serve him, to carry our cross and walk. And I feel like, you know, with, you know, the question that you asked is why leave your comfort and your life here and go do that? Because a lot of people that follow our work, they see just how brutal and how difficult it is. I mean, for us to be there live and witness all of this, to see the poverty, to hear children telling you they haven't eaten in days, and to witness the inhumane living conditions they're in. You know, a lot of people that follow our work and watch our videos and pictures tell us, you know, we can't even finish watching the footage, let alone how you they're doing all of this. But I say it's only by the grace of God. It's only, you know, the only reason why we're doing this, I always believed God isn't here physically, right? So God works through us to be his pencils, to be his hands, to serve his children, to make a difference. And I feel like that's the sole purpose of everything that we do, is to spread his love, to spread his light, his strength. And I always say, you know, we're so appreciative for all of the support, the love, the care, the motivation that people give us, as much needed on a difficult journey as this. But I always say, don't thank us, just thank him, because everything we do is for his glory. It's not for any one of us. It's all of our work is for him.
I know that idea of thanking, if we can talk a little bit about that, because I know that that's a very difficult one many times, because you want to just do the right thing because mm-hmm. it's right. But also there's the issue of inspiring others. I know that last week Arch Sirpazan, Archbishop Hovnan, honored your mom.
Yes.
And I couldn't think of anyone better. I mean, that was a beautiful gesture on Sirpazan's yes. part to do that. And yeah, somebody could stand back and say, well, you shouldn't do it for the thing, but how many people are inspired by that? I think just you talking about this is inspiring. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you don't mind, how old are you?
I'm 26.
26. Okay. What 26-year-old is thinking about these kind of issues? But by you talking about it, it becomes a something that
of course.
Somebody can say, hey, if she's doing it, what's wrong with me? Right? So I really appreciate you doing to put yourself out there. And I really appreciate the way you articulate yourself, because that's also a part of this. But let's talk about the faith aspect, because I know there's a lot of people who are searching. not only for the answers, but how do I fit in with that answer? Where is my life going? Mm-hmm. What would you say to somebody coming up, another 26-year-old who would come up to you and say, that's pretty cool, you know, and I'm inspired by what you do. Mm-hmm. What do you think I should do? And I'm not Armenian. I don't have anything mm-hmm. to do with Armenia or Syria, but what should I do?
Mm-hmm. There have been many times that this has happened with both Armenians and non-Armenians, and we've actually had people that have volunteered for the charity, that have joined our team here in LA, that have joined us in Armenia and have witnessed everything that we do themselves. And, you know, if someone were to ask me something like that, I believe, you know, God even mentions it in the Bible that, you know, he's blessed each one of us with our own unique gifts, and not for ourselves, but to serve other people with it. And I believe that every person is gifted with their own, you know, set of unique skills and things that they can offer to give to others. And, you know, if someone were to come to me and be inspired by our work, I would definitely encourage them to join in any way that they could, whether it was join us in Armenia and you know, witness things themselves, or join in on the team and take part of the volunteer work. Because I feel like from that avenue, other doors will open. You know, when you start humanitarian work, when you start on the journey of helping other people, you know, it is through that journey that you can find your purpose and find why you're here and you know, what you, the purpose of your life is and what you're here to do. And I always say every person has their own gift. It's not meant for everyone to start a charity. You know, that was ours. To someone else, it could be giving their time. To someone else, it could be giving their money. To someone else, it could be giving their love. Every person has their own unique gift to give. And I believe if you are patient, if you pray, if you give yourself the opportunity to explore that, you will find it.
How about advice to the bigger question? There is so much garbage going on in the world. Mm-hmm. Very negative. I mean, you lived through this last 2 years. I mean, COVID's the umbrella over mm-hmm. it, but underneath it, political unrest, political misunderstandings where we're not talking to each other. You've got wars going on. You've got climate issues that people are making into political issues. 101 things. And then on top of it, we as Armenians are feeling the effects of a war. So you've got all these negative things. What keeps you positive? What would you tell somebody? Like, this is a negative world. And I hear a lot of it. I'm sure you have too.
Of course.
This is horrible world. What advice do you give them? Like, why they should keep going?
You know, being a very sensitive empath, breathing everything in, taking everything really deeply to your core, it's really difficult not to be affected by everything going on, especially nowadays. And I feel it. I'm saddened by it. I'm hurt by it. I'm angered by it. All of it. You know, I will never be able to lose my ability to feel all of that. But I feel like the world is what it is. There's always been atrocities, and there always will be. And I feel like, you know, lately I had a bit of a revelation, so to call it, where, you know, we had a very good friend of ours who we were in long discussions about faith, and we spoke about, you know, how exactly what you said, the world is such a negative place. How can you not be angered and saddened by everything going on, this, that? And she came from a different perspective that really was eye-opening to me and actually has helped both my mom and I change our perspective to certain situations and act differently than we would have other times. So, you know, whoever is in the faith knows that, you know, God is love, right? God is peace. God is joy. God is forgiveness. God is all good things. But what is God not? What is the enemy? God is the opposite of God, the enemy, Satan meaning, is anger, sadness, problems, all the things that are opposite God, right? So looking at it from that perspective, where, you know, if I let myself be consumed by all these things that are happening in the world and, you know, go down my path of depression and anger and, you know, just letting it all consume me, then I'm kind of letting the enemy take over and not allow and pretty much making the enemy happy while not making God happy, right? Kind of going against him. And having that change of perspective, now I'm a lot more conscious of it. And when I'm saddened or angered by things that are going on, like lately, all the robberies that have been happening in LA is just unbelievable. You know, I let myself feel whatever I need to feel, and then I snap out of it. And what keeps me going, what keeps me positive, honestly, Father, is prayer. Honestly, I mean, it gets to a point that that's all we have. prayer and God is all we have. Because if you let yourself go down that dark hole, you will feel so helpless, so hopeless, where, you know, a lot of things have become a concern and a fear. Like, you know, people my generation, we're worried about having kids now. You know, we're worried about how we're going to be able to raise them with all the things going on and safety and all of this. And I feel like there's only so much our human brains can handle. And then comes God, right? So to me, what keeps me going, what keeps me positive is just trying to focus on that light at the end of the tunnel, focus on all the good that I can do in my life that can hopefully make this world a bit of a better place, and just focus on God in prayer and hold on to Him as tight as I can.
Well, you certainly have accomplished much in your your young age, and God bless you. I'm going to go to something you threw out at me last week in our Armenian interview. You said that Mother Teresa said, we are a pencil in God's hands. Mm-hmm. And I asked you something, and I bet you've thought about it ever since. Right? You're shaking your head.
I have.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you now, if you're that pencil in God's hand, what would you want God to write?
You know, what's interesting about when Mother Teresa said this is when a lot of people were thanking her and commanding her for her work, and she said, don't thank me, I'm just a pencil in God's hand, right? Mm-hmm. And to me, what would I want God to write? I would want God to use me as a means to give to His children whatever He wants to give them, whether it's that strength, whether it's that hope, you know, whether it's that light, whether it's exactly what we need to hold on to keep going, you know, despite living in the treacherous world that we do. So, to me, it would be the greatest honor to be the pencil in God's hand that could write the spreading of His love, His peace, His strength, forgiveness, everything that He has to give us, and to have Him use me as a means to help others. You know, that's always been my prayer. God, use me, use us to get to whoever those You want us to help. Use us, and because, you know, obviously He's not here physically, so use us as Your hands, as Your pencils, to be able to do Your work, you know, do Your missionary work, and to make the best difference possible.
Beautifully said. Thank you. I want to conclude with this thought that you threw out at the very beginning, because you probably didn't realize how closely aligned we are. You said that you go to Gyumri in summer and winter to feel the worst of the worst. On that. And that's exactly in His shoes. That's the mentality, to walk in the shoes of someone else, to feel their pain. We understand that they have pain, but you really don't get it until you feel it. So let me ask you this. Feeling other people's sufferings, how does that make you more empathetic? Or does it, maybe, would you still be the same if you didn't feel their pain?
I think even before Fly's work, I've always considered myself being an empath, somebody who feels deeply with others, with their pain. I've always been sensitive. I've always, you know, taken things deep to my core. But after doing Fly's missionary work, that's just multiplied tenfolds. Because when it's way different hearing about something like this and actually being there live as a witness, to be able to see it, smell it, breathe it, feel it, it's a totally other experience. And I always tell people, you know, all the footage that you see, that's just a drop in the ocean compared to what it actually is. And of course, undoubtedly, you know, seeing all the poverty that I have, hearing it, witnessing it, that has just grown my ability to empathize by a lot. And I'm so grateful, even though it's extremely painful. And this is actually something that I shared with you when I got back from Armenia in an email, you know, sharing my thoughts and feelings with you, where it's always very difficult to go and participate in these Fly missions. They're extremely painful, but I feel like that's part of the process, right? Because Christ says that, you know, if you're going to follow me, you carry your cross and follow me. And it's definitely not going to be an easy journey, but it definitely is the most rewarding thing in the world, the most fulfilling. And I feel like it is only by feeling with the pain and the suffering of others that you will truly be able to help them and make a difference, because the only way to do that is if you understand them. And at the same time, your gratitude just grows. I mean, after you participate in a work like this, you just feel ashamed to ever complain about anything. You know, all of us undoubtedly, you know, have our own issues and have our own problems. Who doesn't, right? But, you know, sometimes it takes seeing all of that to just step back and be like, wait, what am I complaining about? What am I ungrateful for? You just feel ashamed to ever complain about anything again. And I feel like that's what grounds me, you know, because of course you forget, you sink back into, you know, life and the problems and everything that goes on. And then, you know, fly is what grounds me. Fly is what reminds me that, hey, I am blessed beyond measure. I'm eternally grateful. I have nothing to complain about. And that kind of reminds you, you know, that, you know, to focus on the light, to focus on the good rather than the bad. And that's what gives you the strength to keep going and to continue helping other people.
Beautifully said and beautifully articulated. I use that word cautiously, but for you, I use it readily, because you just don't know how. I remember we were at St. James several years ago, and I was hearing your voice. I was outside, and they had you piped in, and you were at a fly event, and I was with my wife Susan, and we were walking by, and I go, "Who is that? Somebody's just like speaking." And we found out it was you, and we go back a little bit too, and so I want to congratulate you more than thank you. I want to congratulate you for everything you're doing and wish you God's blessings on you, on Fly, on your family. This is really God's work. And for all of our listeners, we will have links on today's show notes. Please check them out to how you can donate, as well as I believe you have a few videos. I know I've seen. So we'll put links to the YouTube channel so you can see them in action. So you can see what Fly is doing right there on the spot.
Definitely.
And I want to wish you the best. Thank you very much for being with us.
Of course. Today. And do you want me to mention social media so people can know where to follow?
Of course. Yeah. It's awesome. Go for it.
So for all of our listeners, first of all, thank you so much for being with us today. So whoever is on social media, on Facebook, you can find us at freedomlovingyouth-fly or on Instagram, freedom.loving.youth. All of our work is very transparent. So please feel free to follow us. You will see all of the work that Fly does via picture and video, all of our projects that we complete are there posted for you to see, as well as right now we do have a firewood fundraiser happening on Facebook. Whoever wishes to contribute to that, we have a goal of raising $7,500 to keep 75 families warm this winter in Armenia by providing firewood, which is something they obviously can't afford. And upcoming soon, I mentioned today, we are planning on opening a center in Gyumri. Stay tuned for that. That of course needs a lot of time and preparation to construct and get going, but that's the next biggest thing coming up for Fly, is to establish a center that's going to be focused on education and on employment for our children and our families. So that's a huge project coming up that we're so excited for, that all of you can contribute to see brought to life. So
there you go. You got all the information you need, and you're a delightful guest. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Father. Thank you.
God bless you.
God bless.
Well, there you have it. An interview with Alina Samuelian. Like I said, check out the show notes. We'll have links to everything we talked about. But more importantly, like I said, it follows exactly the message that we have coming to us from our church this week. When you give a party, when you do good, give that party. When you set a table, set that table for. When you give a gift, give it to people who have absolutely no way of giving back to you. And you say, well, where did you get that example from? Well, think about it for a moment. What did God give us? He's given us a gift of life, eternal life, for which there is no way that we can repay him, except to do good to others, except to follow what he's asked us to do. So there you got it. A model and an example altogether. I hope you enjoyed it for this week. Here's Susie to make some announcements. I'll be back with my final thoughts.
Before getting back to the next step with Father Vazgen, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. The next step is entering homes and communities with a solid message proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. We look forward to your comments and words of encouragement. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations, either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes and Blueberry, as well as Facebook and Twitter. We are excited about this ministry and invite you to share in our enthusiasm. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the Next Step with Father Vosgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement. And thank you to all of our listeners, to all of our supporters, for just this fantastic outpouring of love, especially during this Christmas season. Our toy drive this year, done in memory of Yvette Hagopian, victim of domestic violence, we reach out to walk in the shoes of others. We reach out to the children of domestic violence with our gifts. Unbelievable. This is like, has to be the best year for our toy drive so far. And these kids, I spoke with the shelter representative, and I want you to know, when we take them to the shelter, we do not see these children. I mean, they are kept under the strictest, most confidentiality. It is just done so professionally. But, you know, think about it. We get to play Santa Claus. And what does Santa Claus do? Comes in and he doesn't get to see anybody. But again, following our theme for today, doing for others who have no way of giving back to you. So this toy drive is fantastic. Okay, what can I tell you? We've been doing it for so many years, and we work with a great group of people called Stock California, stockcalifornia.com. It's a toy store. All you do is you go on there, select all the toys that you want, and at checkout, just put in the code TOY21, TOYS21. And whatever you identify that way, the owner of that place gives us 20% back, which we send off to the children in Armenia as well. And it's just a great partnership. If you feel like using the Amazon link that we have, that's tiny.cc/IHS-wishlist. And there's a bunch of toys that you can order from there. Or you could just make a contribution. Go on the Inner Shoes website and select Toy Drive when you make a donation. Listen, upcoming this weekend, I'm going to be out at Hermosa Beach officiating at the service for Gabriel and KDJ. It's going to be a celebration of life. We're having people from all over the world that are going to be participating in this, particularly the people from Darfur, from the refugee camps. This is a couple that have done so much. You know, a couple weeks ago, I spoke about them on The Next Step. Do check that out. If you missed it, it's important that you listen to it. Also, in the Armenian Church, out of reverence for them and their work, on January 7th, which happens to be Merelots, happens to be the day after Christmas, so it is the day that we remember the memory of those who have passed, but it also happens to be exactly to the day, 40 days, since Gabriel and KDJ passed. And at the St. Leon Armenian Cathedral, we're going to be having a special requiem and remembrance of these two incredible human beings who really touched the lives of so many. So put that on your calendar, and there'll be more coming up. This Sunday evening happens to be the children's memorial service in memory of Katia Hampardian and all the kids that have passed away before their time, with a special remembrance for the children of war. And by that, I'm talking about the soldiers who were all children. All children. Yeah. The soldiers of war who died last year because the Turks came in and did what they do. They killed. They killed. And you can't whitewash it. You can't say it any other way. There was a sneak attack. They came and they killed thousands of people. 44-day war. So we will remember the soul of those children as well this Sunday evening. And in so remembering, we also invite ourselves to that moment of prayer, to understand ourselves as part of the solution. Things that we talk about here on The Next Step and In His Shoes. And that about does it for this weekend. I'm going to be celebrating the Divine Liturgy at the St. Leon Armenian Cathedral this Sunday morning. If you want to follow along, it's 10:30 a.m. Pacific time. That's California Pacific time, and it will be streamed on the Western Diocese Facebook page. You don't need a Facebook account to watch. Just open up, and you'll be with us. Well, that does it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. I want to make a big shout out to Adam Musoyan, who did the engineering on the interview. A very special thank you to Alina Samuelian and to The Fly. And on behalf of the wonderful team that put together today's show, Susie, our producer, this is Father Voskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
I forgot to ask you if you're seeing the same sky as we are.